Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guests will be Jasmine Fuego and Leah Song. They are both involved in the Permaculture Action Network, and I'll tell you more about each of them and what the Permaculture Action Network is in just a little bit. But first I want to go over some things going on in and around the city, talk to you about some things in the news. I'll stay away from politics because that's just an impossible conversation. So let's talk about things that are going on. Up at Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture, they are continuing with their Growing Farmers Initiative, and that is, you know, on Thursdays, a free event. And today is one that is called Tillage. And these are free workshops for farmers and gardeners who want to learn more about farming. So check out the Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture, their website. You know, next week I know they're having another one. So it's just a great place. They have lots of events. They also have a farmers market. So it's a wonderful place. If you haven't been there, it's a just great place to go and visit. They always have their sheep shearing later on in the season. It's just great. Also, May 21st, the March Against Monsanto, and I've been going every year. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. People are really coming on board. You know, word about Monsanto and their evil ways is out, and people are coming together to let their voices be heard. So this is in Union Square on May 21st, and be there. May 26th is the other Growing Farmers Initiative, and that one's on cover crops. June 3rd through 5th, there's a food lab conference at Stony Brook University in their Southampton campus. That starts Friday evening and goes until Sunday afternoon. Check out the food lab conference website or Stony Brook University and Google the food lab conference. They have some great speakers there and a full scheduling for people who are interested in taking an added value product to market. So if you're interested in some sort of food business, this is really a great workshop to go to. June 5th, my daughter and I are doing a workshop here at the IE Green Homestead. It's a women's retreat, dancing with the elements, and a vegetarian cooking class. So if you are free, we would love to have you. So please join the workshop. You can register on my website at iegreen.com. Ilana Mehta, my daughter, has been teaching dance, and her new method called Mehta Method is really trying to engage in everybody their connection with their feminine power, and it is, you know, dancing with the different elements, fire, wind, earth, and air. So that should be great. And then, of course, we'll do a gluten-free vegetarian cooking class that is always wonderful. And we sit down to eat together at a farm-to-table lunch. So join us for that. The next day, on June 5th, the Long Island Food Coalition is having a tour of the North Fork. And we have rented a luxury coach bus to take people from Nassau County and Western Suffolk County. We have two pickup locations out to the North Fork of Long Island. We'll first be visiting Catapano Dairy, which is a goat farm, and you will have a chance to see the process of milking the goats, making the cheese, touring the farm, and tasting the award-winning cheeses that they make there, which are so good. Then we'll go to Widow's Hole Oyster Farm, and there you'll see the whole production of planting the oysters and harvesting the oysters and tasting the oysters. So we'll be there for an hour or so, and then we'll go on to Greenport Brewery to their new facility in Peconic and tour the facility there. Everyone will get a pint of beer. You can purchase more beer if you'd like. You will not have to drive because you will be on our wonderful bus, so you can taste as much beer as you'd like. And then you can purchase lunch from some gourmet food trucks featuring local food that will be on site. So this should be a really fun day. You can register on the Long Island Food Coalition website, and I do have a link from my website as well. On June 7th, Slow Food North Shore, that's the chapter that I am chair of, we are having a film called Inhabit. And this is part of our Let's Eat Food on Films series that we co-present with the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. And it's at 7:30 in Huntington. And the filmmaker will be there as well following the film to answer any questions. And then we'll have a permaculture-inspired reception following the film. So come on out to that. And there's lots more events. I don't want to take any more time to tell you all about them, but do go on to my website to see all the events. And if you don't get my weekly newsletter, I recommend signing up for it, because every week you will get a list of all these great events that are going on and things that are in the news. Last week, I participated in a wonderful event at Union Square. It was Feeding the 5,000, and this was an event that was put on by feedbackglobal.org, and they go into cities around the world partnering with other food organizations that care about hunger and food waste, and their sole purpose is to raise awareness about food waste and raise awareness about hunger and how many people we could feed with food that otherwise is wasted. And so they got hundreds and hundreds of pounds, if not thousands of pounds, of produce donated from Hunts Point Market that otherwise would have ended up in the landfill. So they not only keep it from adding to the greenhouse gas emissions, but they actually use it to feed people. And they fed 5,000 homeless people, and then we fed 5,000 New Yorkers that were just happened to be passing by Union Square with their other meals. And it was just such a great event. And, you know, I wrote about the issue of ugly produce. I know I've been writing about that quite a bit when we talk about food waste. And so often produce that's not beautiful, that has a blemish, ends up in the landfill. And this article in the New York Times last week actually was talking about how very often produce that is what someone might consider damaged is actually more nutritious. That sometimes when a fruit or a vegetable is stressed, it produces more antioxidants as a defensive mechanism. And I know I've talked to you about that before. You know, I've read that lettuce, you know, if you tear lettuce and eat it the next day, it's actually healthier for you than if you tear the lettuce and eat it right then, because by tearing it, it produces more antioxidants as a defensive mechanism because it thinks it's being attacked. And then the next day when you eat it, it's actually even more nutritious. So it's the same kind of thing. But anyway, we want to really raise awareness about food waste. 40% of all the food in this country is wasted because people buy too much. It rots in the refrigerator, or the store orders too much and they have to make room on their shelves. So we just really have to figure out ways to reduce the food waste. And feedbackglobal.org is an organization that's really trying to do that. So that was just a great event. They'll be having it again next week in Washington, D.C. So go to the website feedbackglobal.org and check out the website and see if you want to get involved in the Washington, D.C. one. It's really, really great. I am going to share a recipe with you now. Actually, there's one other thing I want to talk to you about in the news. They were talking about chickpeas. I don't know if you saw that last week. And the juice that chickpeas is cooked in can actually be whipped up like egg whites. And it turns out that this is now a really wonderful new source of food for vegans. You can now make souffles and mousse and all these things that we were not able to make as a vegan, we can now do that. And there was a picture in the New York Times article of the chickpeas being whipped up, and it looked just like whipped egg whites. So it was really amazing and a great article. So you can find that in my newsletter as well. Okay, so I want to share a recipe with you. These are gluten-free pecan and chocolate biscotti, and they are so good. I usually don't do desserts, but every once in a while, a dessert is great. And one of the things that's great about biscotti is you can make them and store them in a plastic bag or in a glass container, that is that you can seal really well, and they'll stay fresh for weeks. So biscottis, you know, they just don't go bad, and so they're a wonderful cookie to make. Okay, so you're going, this is what you need for the dough. 6 tablespoons of butter, 2/3 cup of granulated organic sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1.5 teaspoons baking powder, 2 teaspoons vanilla extract, 2 large eggs, 2 cups of gluten-free flour, 3 tablespoons fair trade cocoa powder, 1.5 cups of ground pecans, 1/2 cup of organic fair trade chocolate chips. I prefer the mini ones, but if you just have the regular ones, those are okay too. And 2 tablespoons of powdered sugar for sprinkling on the top. Preheat the oven to 350 and lightly grease or line with parchment paper a baking sheet. And I always use parchment paper, and I even spray the parchment paper. Anything I can do to reduce the cleaning at the end, I will do. So parchment paper is, you know, my best friend in the kitchen. In a medium-sized bowl, you're going to beat the butter with the sugar, the salt, and the vanilla, and the baking powder until the mixture is smooth and creamy. Then beat in the eggs, and when you do that, the batter may look a little curdled, but that's okay. It's supposed to do that. And at low speed, with your mixer, you're going to slowly add the gluten-free flour. Take a spatula and stir around the edges as well to get all of it incorporated into the mixer. And the dough will be sticky. At that point, you're going to add the ground pecans. Then divide the dough in half. One half is going to be just the pecan part, and one half is going to have the chocolate in it. So you can divide that in half, leave one half of the dough in the bowl, and place the other half on the prepared pan. And half the dough is about 1.5 cups. And you're going to shape the dough on the pan into a log shape that's about 14 inches long by 2.5 inches wide. And you're going to straighten the log and smooth the sides and the top, so that's, you know, really smooth. And you can wet a spatula, or I even use my hands just to really make that smooth. And then you're going to prepare the chocolate dough, and you're going to add the cocoa powder to the remaining dough that's in the bowl, and mix that in. And then you're going to stir in the chocolate chips. And then you're going to, I didn't tell you that you're going to put, when you first do the first half, while you're waiting and you're mixing in the chocolate, put that dough into the freezer just to get it a little harder, so that when you add the chocolate dough on top, you're not going to squish it down into the white dough. And then you're going to do the same thing, putting the chocolate dough right on top of the pecan, the plain pecan dough, and you're going to smooth that over. And then you're going to bake the dough for about 25 minutes. Remove it from the oven and allow it to cool in the pan for about 10 to 25 minutes or so. And then while they're cooling, lower the temperature of the oven to 325. And then using a serrated knife, you're going to cut the biscotti into biscotti shapes, about 3/4 inch wide. And I cut them on the diagonal. I just like that better. And then you're going to bake them again. And you're going to first take the pieces, separate them out on the baking sheet, and return them into the oven. And this time you're going to bake them for 30 to 40 minutes until they feel dry and they're beginning to turn golden brown. And then you're going to remove them, and they'll get harder and crisper as they cool. And this recipe makes about 20 to 22 biscotti that are about 4.5 to 5 inches long. And that's it. It's really, you know, it's not difficult. It can be time-consuming just because you have the couple different steps, but you can do it over the day while you're doing other things, and it really is worth it. They're really, really delicious. So now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guests. Jasmine Fuego is the founder of the Permaculture Action Network, and she's working right now with Leah Song from Rising Appalachia. Leah Song is the lead singer for Rising Appalachia, which is, and she does this with her sister. And their songs are, you know, steeped in tradition and devotion to world culture. And I'm going to let her tell you more about Rising Appalachia. And Jasmine, Fuego is the co-founder of the Permaculture Action Network, and she's located in the Bay Area. And she has been doing the permaculture now for a few years. I actually had her on last year or the year before. She was doing this with another, with a DJ, and now she's doing it with Rising Appalachia, and I'm going to let her tell us more about Permaculture Action Network. Jasmine, are you with me?
I am. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, and Leah, are you with me too?
I am as well. I'm salivating over that recipe.
Good. That's what I hope it does. So, so I'm going to start with you, Jasmine, because the Permaculture Action Network is really what inspired me to invite you on to the radio show, because I'm so in love with permaculture and what you're doing. So can you tell us first a little bit about permaculture before you really get into what you're doing with it, just in case there's people listening who don't really know what permaculture is as opposed to just organic gardening, let's say.
Absolutely. Thank you. So for me, what my experience and practice in permaculture has been is it's really a social and agricultural design method that basically utilizes the patterns and features that have been observed in natural ecosystems to help us care for the earth and also care for each other. And that's, you know, the most simple way that I can boil it down. It's really just observing how the planet functions, how nature, how this earth continues to care for itself and provide the things that it needs, and then taking that and seeing how we can use those exact same functions to then design a more ecologically and socially just sustainable human ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. And so what inspired you to start the Permaculture Action Network?
The Permaculture Action Network is really inspired by seeing that there are lots of resources already out there, that there are lots of organizers, there are lots of nonprofits, and there are a lot of, you know, musicians and artists and large events that all want to do good things in the world, but there, I've noticed that there was a disconnect, that these folks, like, I could see this map and seeing all these different parts happening, but they weren't connecting, and I saw, like, whoa, what if organizers and artists worked with local nonprofits and projects that were happening, what that could look like. I was seeing a real, myself and my organizational partner, Ryan Rising, were seeing a real need for that. And especially in the entertainment business, just seeing that there's so many resources, financial resources, and also ecological and social resources that aren't necessarily being utilized to their full potential. And that was our prime motivation in starting the Action Network, is going to tons of music festivals and spending a lot of time as music and art lovers going to these events and participating and seeing, like, wow, there are 1,000 people here. We all just dance together for 4 hours. What would it look like if we installed a garden or a food forest? What would it look like if we came to a rally and supported, you know, indigenous folks who are needing help to secure their land? Like, what if we could just utilize this energy that's happening around music and entertainment? What's possible?
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your connection to music and entertainment? Were you working in that field first?
Yes. So before I started my path into permaculture, I was working in entertainment doing PR and event planning in L.A. several years ago. And I'm also a dancer. And that's how I know your daughter, Alana Mehta. And I have been a part of, kind of peripherally a part of the music and entertainment industry for several years. And it's always something I really loved, as someone who kind of identifies as a performer and a natural performer, and really loving that space. But once again, just seeing that just for the sake of performing, it kind of felt old for me and kind of felt like there was something missing. Like, what am I, why even spend the time doing this? What are we using it for? And so that's my connection to entertainment, and that was really one of my personal motivators in wanting to build a network and to build an organization that focuses specifically on connecting entertainment with ecological and social justice-oriented projects around the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds fascinating. When you were on last time, you were doing it with a DJ, Polish ambassador, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so now you've moved to Rising Appalachia. So I'm going to move over to Leah. Leah, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and Rising Appalachia and how you connected with Jasmine?
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show. I started a music project about 11 years ago with my sister called Rising Appalachia, is how we say it in the South, but Appalachia was just as well. They're both. We were born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia, and to a very, very kind of culturally rich community, not really financially rich, but culturally rich community that was doing a lot of arts, urban gardening, inner city activism, mural painting, folk traditions, and we started the music project pretty much by accident. We were performing at these events, but mostly both of us pursuing our lives as activists. I spent many years living in Latin America. My sister was working in environmental justice in Northern California, and just making our way through the world, trying to piece together what our best gifts were. And we started doing music just because it was passed down through our family. And the project grew based on invitation. We were invited to perform at different rallies, at protests, at herbalist gatherings. We have actually one of our songs is featured in the film that you mentioned is going to be screened next week.
Inhabit?
One of our songs is featured in that film. So that we were always, I know it was kind of a cool crossover, but we were always really inspired to figure out, similar to what Jasmine said, where our art could actually connect with a purpose. And we started a project this year called the Slow Music Movement, which is essentially what we've been doing for the last 10 years, but, you know, giving it a name gives it a lot more power. And that has inspired us to be more clear about alternative touring and creating spaces where music is taken back to its traditional roots, you know, as storytelling and as entertainment and collecting of people and of energy and, you know, a catharsis, a way to gather in a group. And the very natural next step, I think, for us is to figure out what to do with that group energy, with what we call the bugle horn. We've got the stage and we've got the people power, and then what do we do to be responsible with that, to be committed to steering with that people power? So we've been working with Jasmine and the Permaculture Action Network. We have a few action days scheduled this year that we're very, very inspired by, really honestly just turning concerts into orchards, into gardens, and seeing all those hands come together and serve the soil and serve the neighborhood and really have a direct service to the places that we go. We also always are exploring alternative touring. We've done some touring by train. We're working on touring by horseback coming up fairly soon. And farm to table, bringing local food to the green rooms. The music industry is not notoriously very sustainable. So just in every possible way that we can, creating a blueprint so that there are ways that we can be more connected locally as performers and ways that we can connect our audience more with what's going on the ground. So it's a project that we've pretty much dedicated our lives to in figuring out how to do it as well as we can.
It seems like such a perfect synergy. I'm surprised it's taken so long for, you know, someone to come up with this. Because you do. You have the energy at concerts is so wonderful, especially when it's not, you know, so drug-filled, which I'm happy to say when I've gone to a lot of the music festivals that my daughter's involved in that I've, you know, been fortunate enough to go to, there's not a lot of drugs. You know, it really feels like the consciousness is much higher than that. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't mean that my people might not be having a drink or smoking some pot or whatever, but it's not, you know, I remember what it was like when I was younger, you know, and everybody was completely wasted. And it's not that
right.
kind of thing, you know. And
right.
there's so much consciousness that people really want to do good, and so many people don't have an outlet. And so if you make it easy for them,
right.
they're willing to jump on board.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we really saw with, like, the inception of the Permaculture Action Network. I mean, the conversation about the Permaculture Action Network actually started a little over 2 years ago in Costa Rica at Envision Festival, and at an event following Envision Festival that the Polish ambassador, the first artist we joined forces with, and Rising Appalachia were present at. And it was really just seeing, like, okay, specifically those festivals that you're talking about and these different music events that your daughter's involved in and that I'm pretty deeply involved in, we were just seeing, like, okay, there's less of the drug and there's less of, like, that pool in this in a specific community, but still, and the consciousness seems much higher for a lot of young people who are partaking in different music-going events these days. But what I was observing was a lot of talking. A lot of going to workshops, a lot of having discussions, which is such a beautiful starting point. But someone like myself who's like very just like, okay, now what?
Right.
I was just like, where do we like actually channel the energy? Where do we channel that consciousness? Where do we channel that good intention? How do we channel that into like actual tangible change, right? Like not just change for a weekend where we all go somewhere in a beautiful place and we dance and we sing and we have a great time and listen to music and maybe take some wonderful workshops, maybe have some personal transformation, but how do we bring that out into the larger world for other people to really benefit from, for our larger world community?
What would plant a garden and in lasting ways, if you plant a garden, then, you know, there's a way that can be a resource for weeks, years, potentially even generations if it's well done. So it does take this sort of the music festivals, and even music itself is very elusive, and it takes it and turns it into something very tactile and tangible and physically rooted, which has a lot more staying power.
That brings to mind a question as well. Have you looked back at some of the permaculture action days that you did where you started a garden? Are those gardens still going? How have they continued, or was it really kind of like a one-day action and then the energy petered out and nothing really came of it?
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful question. Well, so on the first tour, for the listeners who don't know about it, 2 years ago, shortly after I interviewed with you in Alien Aereo, myself and the Permaculture Action team, we went on a national tour that went to 32 cities from San Francisco to New York. And after every single one of the Polish ambassadors' concerts, we had a Permaculture Action Day, which was a project day where we brought out the fans from the concerts to either a local farm, school, garden, various projects that were happening on the ground in those cities. And in a lot of those places, each project was different, but we, installed a lot of gardens. We, helped build more structures in some of these gardens and urban farms, obviously added a lot of art to community schools and things like that. And there were a lot of instances where, a lot of the times we mostly partnered with projects that were already existing, that existed before we came to town, that really just needed a lot of manpower to, you know, either build a greenhouse or to build a barn or to, you know, install their, like, cob oven. But there were some projects in cases where it was a new thing. And we went in that day and really just, like, came in with hundreds of people and just installed an entire community garden. And very few instances, but it did happen where it happened to, like, not have the sustaining effect that some of those gardens aren't there anymore. One of the action days that we did last year with the Polish ambassador and Rising Appalachia, when they did a show together in Denver, Colorado last year, we went to a park called Sustainability Park and built several tiny homes on wheels for the large houseless community that's there. And I mean, that last, we had maybe two or so hundred people come out to participate in that throughout the day, and it was a really beautiful and radical project. But the next day, the local authorities came and physically dismantled all of that, and that very rarely happens. Most of our projects are like operating very much within the legal realms of the cities that we're in. But there has been some cases where everything doesn't last. And that was really the Permaculture Action Tour, which was intended at the time to be a six-week tour to just see what it looked like to radically change what national music touring looks like. Now, the Permaculture Action Network, what we are doing is kind of in response to that, okay, so what happens now? We come in for one concert and then we're gone. And realistically, like you said, myself and the core of our team were based in the Bay Area. And so the idea of the network is that we're doing trainings and we're doing coaching with individuals that we've worked with in the past all over the country, so that I don't have to fly out to every one of Rising Appalachia shows, that there are people in the cities who are not only going to have the responsibility and the know-how to organize these days when a concert or a big event or a show comes into their town, that they can utilize to bring an audience out to a project, but they can actually be engaging with that project throughout the year. And so the Permaculture Action Network is really taking the tour to the next level, where it's just all around more sustainable, where it really takes myself as the co-founder kind of out of the holding all of the power. And so this is really our attempt at like making the power more horizontal and more accessible, so that anyone really, if they want to become an organizer, they can come and train with us and learn how to be a leader in that way as a permaculture action organizer in their own city.
Sounds great. And Leah, how much do you get involved in promoting the Permaculture Action Network?
Yeah, well, like I said, this is our first we've been organizing two now, and we've got about five scheduled for the year, and it's a project that seems so very closely aligned with the work that we are already doing. And so it's very, very exciting and inspiring for our team. We're all one half folk musicians and one part hip hop heads and one part farm and garden, you know, addicts. So the idea that we can actually have a day around a concert, the music world can be very fast paced, and that we can actually be out in the ground and in the soil and planting is a really big dream come true for us as performers, as musicians. It's a big part of our side project. So I think everyone in the Rising Appalachia family is really, really inspired to promote, to show up, to tell our people, to announce it at the shows, to be involved in spreading the word. Because like you said earlier, it's a really natural relationship to want to take a project that is very able, like music, to gather a large group of people and then partner with a project that is very tied to grassroots organizing and direct action and service within a community. So we are on board 100%, really inspired and excited to do this and to see our sort of slow music movement, which has been very, very nonprofit oriented, but has mostly focused around bringing nonprofits to our shows. And what's been really exciting about the Permaculture Action Network is going just that additional step forward and going past the show and directly into the community with the people that are at the performance, with the people who are involved in our world musically, or who are involved in the local community around the activism that's going on the ground. So we are on board in every possible way, announcing it, making little videos from the road, showing up with shovels and seed balls and playing at the events, and just really excited to see this idea take root and hopefully be a blueprint that performance artists can use across the board. You know, I think that that's something Jasmine and I are both really excited about, is that it can not just be of service to our personal goals, but that can maybe create a platform that working artists can use all across the country and extend much past our own reach.
Mm-hmm. Right. That sounds great. When things are replicable, they really can, you know, make a much bigger impact.
Right. Yeah.
And when you call yourself when you talk about the slow music movement, are you getting involved in the slow food movement with that? Like, are you connecting to that, or are you just kind of taking part of that name and riding with it?
A little bit of both, you know. I mean, we've toured pretty heavily in Italy, where the slow music movement kind of got its slow food movement got its origins, and that was very inspiring to us to have that relationship with food prepared, you know, on the ground. Each promoter at our shows would make pasta from scratch, and we would all go out and harvest our own herbs for the sauces, and the wines were always from the vineyard where we were performing. And it was such a different place to what you see in American food culture, music culture. I mean, you know, we live in the sort of heart of Babylon as far as rushing goes, immediate gratification. So we were really inspired by that, and I think we're, as just in our individual lives, all doing a lot of work to live as locally as we can, to have relationships with local farms, with baking breads and making our own meads and tea blends and harvesting locally, and that's something that we've been involved in for many, many, many years. Through the herbal medicine community and through a lot of local farm relationships, permaculture, and I think the slow music movement was very much an idea to piggyback on that idea. We have a friend who also has a project that is tying in the slow clothing movement, and she is creating a lot of different clothing designs that she sends us and we wear on stage. So then we have local clothing, and then we have local food in the green rooms, and we're able to tour in a way where we're not jet-setting across the country on a bunch of flights, and the whole thing starts to come together in a way where our relationship to where we are, even as travelers, is that much more intentional. And I think that's a lot of long-term goals, but we can see them all slowly coming into place.
Mm-hmm. And Jasmine, when you go into these different cities, I would think you have to make the connections with the people on the ground way ahead of time. How do you find the organizations that you want to partner with?
Yeah, absolutely. We work really, really hard to utilize the resources that exist within the permaculture community. The permaculture community is like pretty niched. It's quite small, and so people who are into environmental food justice oriented work here in the Bay kind of have like their fingers and their hands in a lot of different organizations and partnerships all over the country. And so my first thing on a very personal level is I reach out to my community and say, hey, I'm headed to Denver, Colorado. Who are the people in Denver that you know of that like we would be a good partnership for us? And there's been time, and there are certain cities and places where the Permaculture Action Network just has, over the last 2 years of touring around, we just have really long lasting partnerships within Denver and Asheville and Portland and obviously most of California. But there are some places like out in Kentucky or Boise, Idaho, where we didn't have any personal connections. And there were some cases where we just put out a call on Facebook asking, hey, people in Boise, what are the projects that are happening in your area that could benefit from having, you know, a Permaculture Action Day? Like, you tell us, you, the community, let us know where we can best utilize, like, where we can best channel our resources as an organization. There's that, and then, you know, just raw searching on the internet. reaching out and reading articles from the local newspapers online and seeing what is really happening on the ground. It's really this whole project, and it's really beautiful that we decided to call it a network as opposed to the Permaculture Action Tour, is because it is so 100% people power. Myself, my other head organizer, Ryan Rising, like, we are really just the connecting dots. And same with Leah, you know, like, the Rising Appalachia and the music, the musicians that we work with, like, we are all just one part. What really actually makes it all happen, and I would assume it's probably the same with your music, Leah, is, like, we do one particular thing, but it's really the people on the ground who make it happen. So we get a lot of just personal contacts from people in those cities saying, hey, I know of this urban farm that is doing some really cool stuff, but they need a lot of support with this next project they've got coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do as well. Depends so much on our engagement with folks on the ground. I like that term, people powered. It's really one of my favorite ideas and ideologies, really.
Mm-hmm. Can you share with us some of the projects that you have coming up in this next tour together?
Totally.
Yeah, totally.
Well, we just left. We were all just in New Orleans last week for Jazz Fest. We had a beautiful project in the Upper Ninth Ward called at Chris Farms. So the week after next, or the 21st, here in May, we will be in Denver, Colorado. In June, we will be partnering with Rising Appalachia to head over to Summer Camp Music Festival, as well as headed to Berea, Kentucky. And each of those projects will be a lot of garden installation. We've got some cob building happening at each of the Permaculture Action Days. We, as an organization, will be doing some permaculture action hubs, which are educational spaces within music festivals, at some of the festivals that Rising Appalachia will be playing this year. And, you know, there are several projects that need to be planned that are in motion right now. So there's the best way to stay in the loop with that is to either go to Rising Appalachia's website or Facebook page, and, of course, permacultureaction.org, or our Facebook page, Permaculture Action, on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And how many people do you usually get at a typical action day?
I would just like to chime in real quick on that, and Jasmine can definitely give some more airtime to it. But our very first one was down in New Orleans, and Chloe and I were based out of New Orleans for many, many, many years. And it's one of the most powerful cities in the world, but it's not notorious for people showing up. It's very notorious for everyone being really busy, the activist community being quite tired and really focused a lot on the music. And I told Jasmine that, I said, you know, don't, no pressure, let's just organize this, and whoever shows up is going to be really amazing no matter what. And nobody is ever on time in New Orleans, so don't worry. Mm-hmm. And she showed up, and sure enough, there were 30 people already off the jump there early waiting at the gate of this beautiful, you know, urban farm, ready for participation. And I think there ended up being almost close to 100 people there throughout the day, which was incredibly inspiring coming from the local perspective in New Orleans, to have 100 people show up during Jazz Fest on a Saturday in a rainstorm, you know, not really knowing what they were getting into. So that was really special. I know, Jasmine, that you also get many more numbers than that at some of the events. But
and what were you doing at the urban farm? What did you do in New Orleans?
New Orleans was awesome.
It was amazing. It really was.
We finished a cob oven that was built. It's really super cool, actually, how the New Orleans organizing happened. We reached out to this farm. Leah was actually riding her bike a few months ago and said, hey, Jasmine, I think this farm might be really cool for our action day. Like, what do you think? Like, why don't you reach out to them? So I reached out.
Took a photo of it.
Yeah, super people powered, you know, or pedal powered in that particular case. And I reached out to the person who runs the farm, a guy named Zachary George, and said, hey, this is what we do. We'd love to partner with you if you have any projects coming up. And he's like, well, yeah, we've got some things that I want to do, but what do you think? Like, what would you, we would love to build a cob oven. And so what ended up happening is that, Zachary and some people in his neighborhood, they organized this cob building workshop leading up to the Action Day. Just for the Action Day, they wanted to have a cob oven for the local community events that they have there.
Is that a solar-powered oven?
It's not a solar-powered oven. So a cob oven is basically an oven made out of clay. And the clay mixture it depends on where the bioregion is. But in New Orleans, it was dirt, straw, chicken manure, and clay that they got from a nearby river that you stomp mm-hmm. on with your feet, and when you set it and make a shape out of it, if you let it dry in the sun, it becomes like concrete. So it's fire-powered.
Wow.
Yeah. We're utilizing natural resources. And we have we finished local. That oven.
And you go ahead. I was going to say, so you've built a cob oven, and is that that's not a project that 100 people can get their hands around, though. So do you have other projects going on simultaneously for other people to do?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Leah, tell them about some of the things that you were doing.
Yeah, we had, there was a beautiful whole table of plants that were going to be all edible food that were getting planted all around the property. There was a structure that was being built. They were putting in the posts for an extended stage. They're running a community festival, the Ninth Ward Arts Festival, I think they were calling it, that it's just been 2 years running, and they had a real makeshift stage. So they were putting in the posts to extend that stage out to be able to fit larger music projects in the future and local folks. There was poetry going on. There was several people speaking about what was going on locally in the community, and there were kids doing seed ball planting. We did some tree planting. There was compost studies going on. I mean, there was really just many different areas. You could go in any direction, and somebody was taking the lead on a project and showing what they knew about, be it planting or watering or weeding or hugel culture, which you can talk a little bit more about if we want to dig into that. Just really active and very people-powered. Again, people-led. Different folks mm-hmm. taking the lead in different directions of what they knew how to do, and everyone just piling into what they were drawn to and helping.
Right. Now, as a slow foodie, my question then is there a food portion to it? Do you all sit down to eat together, or is there, I know when last year or the year before, Jasmine, when you came through New York, I know I made some vegan chili and rice for your event here in New York. Do you try to do some sort of communal food thing or potluck type of thing for each of these action days?
Absolutely. The food, free food is absolutely foundational to a Permaculture Action Day. Brian, myself, and our Permaculture Action team, we've worked really hard to put together like a list of ethics, because we ultimately want this to be replicable. So we were realizing like, okay, what does it actually mean to have a Permaculture Action Day? And the most important elements for us are obviously a hands-on project. A hands-on project, ideally, that's on a publicly accessible piece of land or a center, a place that is accessible to the average person. The second thing is an education piece, that people come and that they are able to, like, really drop in and learn something new. So it's not just, okay, everyone, like, come to this place and build this thing for free for this place. You know, it's very specific that people need to be learning about a different permaculture principle. And the third, and I think almost most important piece, other than like it being connected to a music or art entertainment event, is the free food. Because even sometimes we just have like several hundred, like up to 500 people come out, and we don't always have enough projects. for every person to get into. But what's important is that we really share the time together. That is like one of the biggest pieces I've pulled for permaculture action in my experience in it. So the free food, delicious, locally sourced, obviously organic food is key to what makes these days what they are, the magic that they are. And so a lot of the times we do it potluck style, where we put on our flyers and on our Facebook events, like, hey, bring a dish that you're excited, bring a dish that you love to, that you enjoy cooking, that's locally sourced and organic. And we reach out to the local businesses or individuals like yourself who are doing different catering projects or farm-to-table projects, and we reach out and ask for donations, and sometimes we have the funding to be able to purchase food from a local business. But there's always an element of food, and it is very essential. If people are working and dancing and playing, people have got to eat, and that's like the one thing foundationally that connects really all people, is like we all eat.
Right.
We all want
right.
good food.
And everyone can eat. That's why it's so good to go vegetarian, because everyone can eat that.
Absolutely.
You know, I know I always find that these days I'm doing it also gluten-free, just because it seems to be such a trendy thing. But
oh,
it's easy
yeah.
to do, so why not, you know? It's easy to just substitute a pasta for a gluten-free pasta or rice or whatever. But I agree. I think food is the essential thing that binds people together and brings people together. So anytime you have people together, I think the food part has to be there. So I'm glad to hear it is. How do you fund your projects?
Yeah, so our funding has taken many forms. Most recently, as we launched the network and have become a nonprofit, our team in Rising Appalachia put together an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign, which is a platform, an online platform, to raise funds. And so we just finished a campaign that we actually exceeded our asking goal, which is amazing. Thank you to everyone who was a part of that. And for the future, now that we are a nonprofit, we are looking into writing grants. We are obviously able to accept donations, tax-deductible donations at this point, and I'm really reaching out to a lot of philanthropy groups for funding in that way. But really, as I said before, that we're people-powered, and so at this point we're going to be moving forward into our organization structure. We're really going to be really relying on personal donations as well as grants.
Mhm. Well, that's great. When did you get your nonprofit status?
Like 4 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's, you know, it's dipping our toes into new worlds. We were kind of operating very grassroots style for the last 2 years, and it was really wonderful. We were supported by the Polish ambassador. He helped fund us a lot over the last few years, his record label, Jumpsuit Records, several music festivals were funding us. But now our projects are growing larger, and there was definitely a call to us to become our own nonprofit so that we could start taking larger donations. And what happened with the organization is it started from grassroots, and now it's really grown into something much larger than we'd ever anticipated. So the nonprofit was really, really needed. And we're really happy to be able to support other groups who don't have their nonprofit status, that we're able to maybe co-write grants with them in mind and their projects in mind, and really use our nonprofit status as an umbrella for other groups that are looking to do similar things.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting. Have you thought about doing any type of projects with schools, partnering with schools and working with children?
Yeah, absolutely. I work with another nonprofit called the Mindful Life Project that's based in Richmond, California, which is in kind of the North Bay area. And we really focus on what I call the social permaculture element, which is really like the inner ecosystem. And a project that we are working on with them right now is called a mindful garden. And what we're doing with this garden is we're obviously going to build a garden bed, and the students are going to, these are elementary school students, by the way, they're going to plant the garden. The shape of the garden is going to be a U, and it's going to be large enough to fit a 25 to 30 student class. And the idea is to have like a space there within the garden for students to come and do meditation, or to come and have conflict resolution, or just to come and sit during recess, because for some students, recess actually isn't like a relief time. It's like a very socially stressful time for some of our more introverted youth. And the Permaculture Action Network is teaming up with a local elementary school called Perez Elementary School and the Mindful Life Project to put in not only a garden that they're going to put in this bed where they can, you know, learn about how these plants function and what their uses are, and to eventually eat those plants as they begin to fruit in the fall when they come back from summer break, but also just to have a space to be working on their inner ecosystem.
Great. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that you are doing that, because they certainly need it. But we're almost out of time, so I would love if both of you could share information about how people would get in touch with you or your websites, so that people can see where Permaculture Action Network is going next and where Rising Appalachia will be.
Nice.
So that they can take part.
Yeah, I'll jump in then, so you can end on the Permaculture Action Network. But you can learn lots more about what we are doing with Rising Appalachia at thatveryname.com. You just have to spell it right. So it's Rising Appalachia, is APPALACHIA.com. That's on Facebook. It's on Instagram. And the Slow Music Movement is when the final stages of launching that website itself, but you can learn more about that project off of our webpage, as well as the Permaculture Action Network.
Wonderful. And thank you, Leah and Jasmine.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
PermacultureAction.org, is that your website?
Yes, we're super happy and proud to be partnering with Rising Appalachia Music. You can find out about the projects we have upcoming with Rising Appalachia and other places and events that we'll be a part of at permacultureaction.org. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram.
Great.
And my name's Jen Fuego. You can reach me there.
Wonderful. And everybody out there, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.
Bye.